Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 32 of the Big Apple Sports Media Podcast. I'm Anthony Evangelista. As always, I'm joined by Kyle Keegan. How are you today, Kyle?
I'm good. The usual, you know, nothing interesting. Not really much news going on in my life, but I'll ask you because I don't usually. How are you today?
I'm not too bad. It's cold. I did a lot of shoveling today. My back kind of hurts, but other than that, in terms of the sports world, it's also been very boring for me. I don't know. I feel like without Jets or Giants football on, I'm always just one step behind everything else. And the Knicks haven't been doing too incredible. Baseball, still nothing. Rangers just here and there. So, you know, not terrible. Just not that great.
Just had a snowstorm. I'm sorry. My dogs are barking. Okay, we're chilling. Yeah, so we just had a snowstorm, so that was pretty cool. But other than that, like, there's not much going on. But, yeah, we have some we're going around the horn again today, pretty much just like we have been. There's no Giants and Jets stuff, obviously. We'll do a little bit of Super Bowl at the end just for fun. Let's just get into it. Baseball. Tell the viewers what you told me this morning.
So this morning I woke up and I had a dream that I originally thought was real. I had a dream that the Mets signed Trevor Bauer and that they traded for a starting lefty pitcher as well. I don't remember the details of the trade. I just remember that they signed Trevor Bauer, and I woke up this morning thinking it was real. And then for the first like hour that I was up, I genuinely thought that this was a thing that happened last night because it was just like in the back of my mind and I didn't really think too much about it. And then I went on Twitter and I was like, oh, that was a dream. Okay, that makes a little more sense now because I just didn't remember anything about it. So maybe that's an omen, like you were saying before, the day before the Yankees signed Gerrit Cole, you had a dream that they signed him. Is that correct?
Oh, it wasn't like the day before. It wasn't like the following weeks. But it's interesting. You texted me that this morning, and my Gerrit Cole jersey was on my desk chair for some reason. Like, I don't know why. But my Gerrit Cole jersey was out this morning, and we were talking about how we had to record today, the usual stuff. And then I was like, oh, we should talk about Bauer. You told me about the dream, and I was like, oh, that's interesting. I had a dream that Gerrit Cole signed with the Yankees last year. But obviously that happened a lot more swiftly and quickly than the Bauer thing. So to get into that, because this, I guess, it indirectly involves the Mets. I don't know why he's taking so damn long to just pick a team.
Yeah,
he's the best starting pitcher on the market, and he's done nothing but drag it out and make a show out of it for the last 3 months, which is kind of annoying at this point because, like –
No, it just seems like Gerrit Cole is asking for more money and they're not giving him it. And then he's just not budging on his original offer, which I think is not the correct way to go. And maybe that's his agent. Maybe that's him just not agreeing on a deal or a team. But I just think that this should have been done almost a full month ago.
Well, I agree. And that's the thing. It's like when guys go into the free agent market, like another guy that like sticks out to me that I remember like got a big free agent deal is like David Price or someone like that. Like, they usually have a track record of having been very good for the last few years without the caveat of a shortened season and, you know, just more consistent over the course of their career. And then there's Trevor Bauer going out there asking to break the AAV record that Gerrit Cole set last year. Here's the thing. Gerrit Cole was consistent for like 3 or 4 years before that. He should have won Cy Young in 2019, and he's the second best pitcher in the world. So the fact that he got that contract makes sense on the open market. Obviously, there's Jacob deGrom, who signed a hometown discount extension with the Mets. I'd assume he'll probably stick with the Mets for the next go-around. I don't know. He's not a free agent for a while, but you get the point. And then there's Trevor Bauer going out there asking for just completely ridiculous sums of money that just aren't his worth. And I feel like regardless – first of all, I'm at the point where I don't even know if he'll be on a team on April 1st when the season starts. I don't know if he'll be on a team when pitchers and catchers report in 2 weeks, which is really exciting. But, I feel like the process has been, like, so dramatized. It almost feels like the decision of 2011 with LeBron James, except, like, no one – it's just not even close. It's almost like they're making a show out of it. Like, Gerrit Cole signed last year on December 10th, or the agreement was reached on December 10th, which was my 16th birthday of 2019. That's 6 weeks after the season. Now we're 7 or 8 weeks until opening day, and it almost seems like we haven't had any like real concrete reports. Like, we haven't seen any of those guys like Passan, like Rosenthal, Heyman, like any of those guys be like, oh, like there's concrete, like serious talks. We've seen like bits and pieces of like, oh, the Mets might have some interest and the Dodgers might do this and Toronto, whatever. And, you know, nothing's really been all that serious yet. And it makes me think like, what the heck is going to happen? It's just weird. You know, it's weird.
Yeah, no, I mean, just the entire process, like I said before, I feel like this should have been done almost a full month ago, where I think he should have been on a team. Like you said, I don't know if he's going to be on a team for the start of the season, but it just seems like it's too, I don't know, with the thing. I feel like if he was going to be a Met, he would have already signed by now. I don't know if that's just like contract talks, negotiations, that kind of thing, trying to see if he could pull in anything more. But I just feel like if the Mets were going to put out an offer, which they already said that they did, it was, I forget what the exact numbers were, but it was a good contract. Like it was more than what normal.
Probably more than what he deserved.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what I was about to say. Like, I just don't think, I think he's asking for too much right now and he's not accepting any negotiations, which isn't the correct thing to do. And you know, as a player, you're always going to value yourself more. You're always going to ask for more money, try to get more money. But this entire process has been going on way too long, where I don't know if that's a sign that maybe the Mets are giving up on him or they're not budging with their offer. I don't know, but I just feel like he would have been a Met already if anything was going to happen.
Yeah, that's not a terrible take, especially with what's been going down with the Mets. Offseason started incredibly, like, fantastic. They got Lindor, and then now there's been a couple things with like the upper management, upper echelon that has gone down, and I just, because of that, don't really see the Mets going out there and making another big splash other than Lindor.
I agree.
And, you know, like the Angels aren't going after Bauer anymore, which was actually very surprising. I thought that was his best fit, actually, especially after they went after Gerrit Cole last year. The Mets offer was thought to be around 3 to 4 years with opt-outs, but less than the $36 million a year that he was searching for. That's obviously Gerrit Cole's salary. He's definitely not going to get a 9-year deal the way Gerrit Cole did.
Yeah, no, definitely not.
I don't even think he'll get 7 years the way Strasburg did last year. Like,
look, yeah, he'll get a...
Like, this is just, it's gone on too long, and I don't know if the Mets are still in, like you said.
Exactly. Like, look, I believe that Bauer is going to get a good deal regardless of which team that he goes to, but I don't know. I feel like with the Mets, it would have happened already. I feel like, I don't know, especially right now. Everything that happened with Steve Cohen and GameStop and him deleting his Twitter account, it's been a little more cryptic than it normally is just with him because he's very open about things. But
the Mets are back. The Mets are back, baby. And by the Mets are back, I mean in the worst, most terrible, horrible ways possible over the course of the last couple of weeks.
Yikes. The Mets are back.
Ugly. But yeah, back to the Bauer thing. Like, the Angels report is now like it's practically zero. You know, like, which is crazy to me because the Angels have never been able to get good pitching. I think the Blue Jays are pretty much out after they signed Springer and brought in Semien. Like, I don't see them spending too much more money.
Me either.
The Mets they're in on him, but I don't know why the Mets would offer more than what that 3 to 4 year. Like, I'd assume maybe it was 4 years, maybe like somewhere between 120 to 135 million.
Look, I think that Bauer is going to end up being a Dodger. That's just my personal
prediction.
Yeah, me too. I feel like that's just
all of us, actually. That's really not fun.
It just makes the most sense in terms of what's most likely going to happen. I think that the last two teams that it comes down to is pretty much the Mets and the Dodgers, and I don't think that he's going to be a Met. And, you know, of course I want him to be a Met, but
in the beginning of the offseason, I could have seen him in San Diego, to be honest with you.
No, me too, 100%.
But then they went ahead and they got a bunch of, like, they got more medium echelon names that, like, they can develop and, like, have more depth, which I understand. And then the Blue Jays, like I said, they got Springer and they got Semien. And, I mean, like, their pitching staff is trash. But
yeah,
I don't really think that they seem to be wanting to fix that for whatever reason. But I mean, I don't really care. The Blue Jays can have crappy pitching. That benefits me. But then the Angels are not in. There's always like random mystery teams. Like, I don't know, like off the top of my head, I could see him like ending up somewhere random, like Chicago for the White Sox, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I know Boston was mentioned, but I don't think that the Red Sox are going to go all in on him. They're not trying to win this year.
Definitely not. Yeah, it doesn't make sense for this year.
Well, also, they're not even trying to compete, so.
All right, well, you know what? Let's switch off. We'll stay in baseball. We'll stay with the Mets. How about Mickey Callaway?
Dude, the fact that this has happened to the Mets twice, sandwiched by their owner being a little bit condescending on Twitter and pissing a bunch of people off in his first couple. I mean, like, this is like the Wilpon circus that, like, we expect from them.
I mean, granted, Callaway is no longer part of the team, but still, just the idea that he was the
manager. It happened while he was a Met, and here's why it's a big deal. It happened under Alderson, Sandy Alderson, who hired him, who also hired Porter. So now he's going to have to field questions about hiring two guys of this just disgusting behavior and, like, just creeps, you know what I mean? Like, just
no, that's the right word, yeah.
Like, they're just creeps, and it's a bad look.
It's a terrible look. I mean, look, putting someone of that kind of – someone with that kind of behavior in a position like your team manager is obviously a horrible thing. So the fact that it's happened twice, not to mention the whole thing with Carlos Beltran, everything with that.
Yeah.
It's not a good look for this Mets team. And obviously things are supposed to be changing now with Mr. Cohen, Uncle Steve up on the top. But still, just the idea that there's been so many different opportunities where this has happened to the Mets. It's just, it's a terrible look.
Yeah, no. And it's a different regime. A lot of this is from past, like the remnants of the Wilpons, be it as it will, it's still a bad look for the team. And, like, you can't change an organization overnight. I feel like a lot of Mets fans forgot that. I think I forgot that because I've been really high on the Mets as well, just as a team, like the based on the players they have and stuff like that. But, yeah, it's just really – it's really ugly, man. It's just – it's such a terrible look.
It's not looking good.
And – can't really go into it other than, like, you got to, like, reprimand that kind of behavior. Like, that's just disgusting. Like,
look, the fact that he's no
the fact that he... with more women coming into sports, which is a great thing, whether it be management or media or coaching or whatever it is, that's a good thing. And I feel like that'll kind of weed out these creeps like this who just take advantage of their higher up position and maybe bring down the fraternity protection of this disgusting sort of stuff where people won't look a blind eye to it as much. But yeah, this has got to stop. And
I agree.
I gotta be honest. I was a little surprised.
Look, I'm glad that he's no longer a part of the Mets organization. I'm glad that it's obviously right now something that's in the past and that the Mets are going to, like, go forward with. I mean, they don't have to replace him. They have to replace the obviously Jared Porter situation, but the fact that he's not a current staff member of the Mets is obviously a positive, because I mean, you're gonna want to get rid of a creep regardless of if you're gonna want to get rid of someone that's terrible at their job regardless of if he's a creep or not. So yeah. The fact that this happened, that this came out now and not a year or two ago, I mean, granted, it probably would have been better for the Mets if they were able to fire him early in his tenure with the Mets, but I think that it was the right decision for the Angels to suspend him. I think that the Mets, Sandy Alderson, they need to do a better job of picking someone out for this role now, for just in general, like background checks, that kind of thing. You want to make sure that you're not hiring another creep.
Yeah.
Apparently that's been a pattern.
Yeah. You're right. And I mean, you can't really go much more into it other than saying, like, it's a bad look for the Mets. You hope they can recover from it. And like, this is the sort of thing that people were hoping they'd leave behind with the Wilpons, and it's reared its ugly head again. And you know, you gotta get smarter. You just gotta get smarter. So
I completely agree.
That's what I'll say on the matter for now. But yeah, not much more baseball stuff. Obviously, it's coming around the corner, pitchers and catchers. I know the Yankees are pretty much done making moves. The Mets, I mean, unless they get Bauer, I'd assume they're done as well.
Mm.
But Yeah, so we're going to have a lot more baseball stuff coming up soon, because wherever Bauer goes, that'll be a thing. And then, yeah. But basketball, New York Knicks, inconsistent again, as usual. I think they're 9-13 right now, but they've been on a little bit of a losing skid. They've won, like, one of their last, like, 5 or 6 games. But they're not playing terrible in all the games. And the thing that was really frustrating about the Knicks the last couple of days is they played really well against one of the best teams in the league, the Clippers. And then they played like crap against the Bulls. And the thing is, they lost both of those games because the Clippers were just unbelievable. And they just played really poorly that Monday, the following Monday against the Bulls. So, yeah. I mean, okay.
Yeah, no, over the last like week or so, it's been very inconsistent, classic Knicks basketball. I mean, hey, Emmanuel Quickley is averaging over 20 points a game, which is very nice to see. The fact that CBS...
He's not starting.
Yeah, I know, that's true. But the fact that CBS Sports was able to own up to the fact that they got their D-plus grade wrong and made it an A-plus was very funny.
Oh, that was funny.
Asking for the Knicks fans' apologies. So the Knicks are playing the Bulls again tonight. They're playing in Chicago. It should be a winnable game. The last one should have been a winnable game as well. I think that there's definitely certain parts of this Knicks team that still need a lot of work. And that's obvious at all times because it's the Knicks. But just the fact that Elfrid Payton is still getting the minutes that he does, that Quickley is not starting, that even Kevin Knox is not getting any minutes, which is kind of upsetting to see because he had a decent start to the season as a role player where he's able to get just like 8-9 minutes in and just be a solid presence off the bench. Granted, that's when people were injured. That's when Burks was out, when Obi Toppin was out. But I mean, look, the fact that Obi Toppin still hasn't really done much shouldn't be too
yeah,
much.
Yeah, I actually wanted to get into that a little bit. I was talking to a friend this morning about the Knicks, and we were like, oh, like Emmanuel Quickley's been a stud, but Obi Toppin's been kind of lying in the leads a little bit. And
no, that's it.
Because he's the backup for the best player on the team.
Yeah. Look, I think that the Obi Toppin pick made sense when you were planning to trade Julius Randle. I think right now, just because of the way Randle has been playing, it's kind of been overshadowing that entire pick as a whole. And you know what? He's got a lot of room to improve. He was injured at the beginning of the season. He still may not be at 100%. But, I mean, you're giving the guy 9 minutes a game. You're giving the guy 10 minutes a game. He's not going to be able to play to his full potential. And there's just certain parts of this Knicks rotation that just don't make sense. The fact that they're playing – I mean, look, I'm glad that Quickley's grabbing these minutes off the bench. But the fact that against the Cavs when they won, Elfrid Payton played 23 minutes and put up 2 points.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just not correct. Like, there's no other way to put it. The Knicks are a decent team, but they need to have a better sense of rotation because what they're doing right now just is not working.
Yeah, I agree with that. I feel that Thibodeau is making a better effort to try and get RJ and Randle a little bit more rest, which I don't mind until you're down 2 with 5 minutes left in the quarter and the fourth quarter and the whole bench unit is still in,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of frustrating. And yeah. Then I feel like it's hard to point a finger on where the Knicks are really like lacking right now. It's just that they can't get the ball rolling everywhere all at once. You know what I mean? Like they're like RJ Barrett, Julius Randle and Emmanuel Quickley all drop 20 plus against the Clippers and they still lose because they play one of the best teams in the league and they just shoot the lights out that day and they can't miss a 3-pointer. And then everyone sucks in Chicago on Monday night because they're all tired and they play really poorly in a very winnable game. And, you know, that just is frustrating. And, you know, the Knicks are still – they're only 4 games under 500 and they've shown stretches of potential where they can be incredible. And they've lost 1 out of 5. They've lost 4 out of 5 now, and they've got one more game in Chicago tonight. So this is like the second game of 2 back-to-backs in Chicago, and I'm going to look at the rest of their schedule. Because I know we always try to preview the schedule, but we never do a very good job. So, and then they have the Blazers on Saturday. That's a tough one. And then they have 2 games against Miami and Washington. Now, part of me wants to say the Knicks should go 3-1, at worst 2-2 in those games, but that's probably, you know, like, that's wishful thinking.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, I think that they should, but in typical Knicks,
Miami's not been playing that great this year either.
That's true.
So that's that, but like,
look, I think over the next 5 games, the Knicks should be able to go over 500. They should be able to go 3-2. They have 2 games against Miami. They have the Bulls, the Blazers in the next 2 nights. And then next Friday, they play the Wizards, I believe.
Yeah. So
you know what? All 5 of those are winnable games.
Like, I mean, they're all winnable games because the Knicks are good enough to win those games. It's just that they're so hot and cold. They're so streaky that it's tough. And it's tough to win those. Like, those are not – none of those games are easy games if we're being realistic. And then another thing I want to point out here is that, like, what are we going to do with the trade deadline? Are we going to be buyers or are we going to be sellers? We've checked in on Zach LaVine. I would love that.
That would be a great pickup, but I saw
Victor Oladipo. I don't know if I'd love that quite as much because, like, adding Zach LaVine, I feel like, is a much better fit. Obviously, he's been a better player this year. He's killed it in Chicago. He didn't play that well against us Monday night, but, like, I think of it this way. You put in a place where over the next couple of years, your starting lineup might be Quickly, Barrett, LaVine, Randall, Robinson. I feel like that's – if you get good enough depth and maybe one more guy in there, then that could be a really, really good team in the East.
I agree. I mean,
they all get better and grow together and get chemistry. Like, I don't know. I feel like that could be a good team in the East.
I'm going to ask you this question. Do you think the Knicks can make the playoffs this year?
Yeah, they totally can make the playoffs this year. I don't know if they will, but they can definitely make it. Like, I don't think I'm at the point anymore where, like, if they end up, what is it? It's a 72-game season, right?
Mm-hmm.
If they finish, like, 34-38 and get, like, that 9 seed to get into the play-in game, I wouldn't be surprised.
I think that's definitely, like, that's where I'd put them to, probably. That's where they're playing. That's the level that they should probably be, realistically. With the talent that they have, I think that they could be a 6-7 seed even, probably closer to a 7 seed.
I think it's like the East is very top heavy. You've got your Brooklyn Nets, your Milwaukee Bucks, your Sixers, your Celtics, and there's like one other contender in there that I'm forgetting, isn't it?
Say those again.
I said Brooklyn, Philadelphia, Boston, Milwaukee.
Milwaukee, yeah. And then really after that, it's just the Pacers are 12-9.
Good teams. Yeah, there's a bunch of pretty good teams.
Yeah. And you know what, right now,
four seeds.
The Knicks right now are 6.5 games back of first place, which is not
going to get the 1 seed.
But no, obviously.
It's worth pointing out.
But I'm just saying, like, right now, with the Knicks being 6.5 games behind the 1 seed, the Pacers or the Hawks, who are in the 6 seed right now, are 4.5 games. So right now, the Knicks are 2.5 games of the 6 seed, which is not bad in the slightest.
Yeah, they just need to find their rhythm where they can get consistent and play good basketball and maybe go over a stretch of 10 games where they can win 7 or 8, or a stretch of 15 games where they can win 10 or 11, something like that, because they haven't quite done that yet, you know? And it's there's a lot of young guys playing big roles in this team that have never been, like, focal points of a playoff team. Like, Julius Randle's not young, but he's never been, like, a focal point of a playoff team. RJ Barrett's a second-year player. He's probably the second-best player on the team. Emmanuel Quickley is a rookie. Robinson is in his third year, and I think this has been his best year yet, you know? Mm. And then you've got a bunch of role guys who some have been doing their job better than others, but, you know, I think the talent is there and the coaching is there. It's just that, especially in the Eastern Conference, but, like, it's going to be tough. It's not going to be easy.
No, I completely agree. I think, honestly, you pretty much hit every point. There's not really much to it. I think that the Knicks have potential. I've been saying this for the entire season. It just depends on how they're able to execute that. I don't think Alfred Payton is their answer. I don't think that their current rotation is the answer. That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
All right, so you know what? Let's move on to the Rangers real quick. Just at the end here, we'll go into Rangers and then a little bit of our Super Bowl prediction type things. So the Rangers had a very interesting week, to say the least. Well, I'll let you start off with that.
Yeah. Well, first of all, over the course of the last three games, the Rangers have picked up 5 of the 6 points that have been available.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Lafreniere scored his first – he scored the overtime winner for his first career goal on Thursday, which was awesome. That was a great moment. And then Saturday is where it gets really interesting. They lost 5-4 to the Penguins in overtime. It's a crappy loss. The defense didn't look good. Georgiev didn't look good. But, you know, it looked like they were finally picking up the scoring, maybe just getting some more consistent play in from their scorers. Panarin is still – Panarin's been a stud. Zibanejad needs to get better. And, you know, Kreider's a rock, like always. But they were finally scoring some goals. A muffed play behind the goal between Georgiev and Tony DeAngelo occurred that led to a Sidney Crosby overtime winner. And then all hell broke loose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so obviously after the game, DeAngelo had some potential words and actions towards him that caused him to – first off, it caused the post-media Zoom, if you want to call it that, to get delayed by about a half hour, which caused a lot of questions and media stir-up, which is what
broke. Obviously, Kreider showed up with a little spot on his fist.
Mm-hmm. So
and I don't know how much Chris Kreider was involved, but it became a mess really quick. And allegedly there was an altercation, a physical altercation between Tony DeAngelo and Alexander Georgiev. Kreider, I heard, was involved in it somewhat. Keandre Miller.
Yeah, it says Keandre Miller was the main guy that like kind of broke it up.
Yeah, which is actually awesome to see because that kid is a stud. And Sunday morning, the New York Rangers placed Tony DeAngelo on waivers. And I think this is what happens when you have a pattern of behavior that disrupts the locker room, that when you're not playing well and you're causing stuff like this amongst the team and there's infighting, and this isn't the first time the Rangers upper management has had to talk with Tony DeAngelo because he's been a problem on and off the ice. And now it came to a head. And right now he's cleared waivers and the Rangers are looking for a trade partner.
Mm-hmm. So I think that for him, at least, a really smart thing to do right now, just because of his past and obviously what happened this week, not just as like, I don't know what the right word is, but I believe that he should kind of, one, put out a public apology, and two, kind of say, like, I'm working to better myself, whether that be with, like, anger management stuff. Because, you know, he's not going to be allowed back into the NHL, really.
Right. He's not going to play. Well, he's not going to – listen, he's good enough to be an NHL defenseman. You know, he hasn't been great this year, but he was pretty good last year. He was a top four defenseman last year. He was a really good scorer. He was a top four Rangers defenseman. He was like top five in defenseman scoring. And, you know, the kid's got talent, but that's never been the problem. It's that it's kind of a jerk. Mm-hmm. And it finally, the head of steam finally came about, and it was ugly. And now the Rangers did what they needed to do. He'll never skate again for the New York Rangers on Madison Square Garden ice. And, you know, they did what they had to do, and it sucks to lose a great defenseman like that, especially with the little depth the Rangers have at that position. But they did what had to be done. And, you know, I'm not sorry to see him leave if he's going to be a jerk and cause problems in the locker room.
Look, honestly, he was one of my favorite players on the Rangers. But recently, like you said, he has kind of been inconsistent. And I don't know. I just feel like you got to just root for the best for him. But I think that the Rangers right now are in a decent spot where that's not a huge blow. That's not a blow actually really at all, because, I mean, if you saw their most recent game, they were able to play, obviously one game doesn't mean anything, but just the fact that they're able to kind of pick up from what happened and win. And I think that right now they have a decent amount of confidence where they're just going to put it behind them and pretend that it never happened.
Yeah. And I hope you're right about that. And I said to myself watching that Rangers Penguins game that winning this game is going to dictate how the rest of the season will go. They'll either curl up in the fetal position, go to 0-4 against Pittsburgh on the season, and just kind of die. And there goes the whole shortened season. Like, you just kind of have to throw it in the trash bin. Or they can step up, play the most complete game they played in the season. They were depleted on the bottom six forwards to be nice. I mean, they were losing. They didn't have Filipino, who's going to be out for about a month now. They didn't have Colin Blackwell, who's come out and he's been a stud. He got the assist on the Lafreniere goal in the bottom six. He's been good enough, producing points, playing good defense. And then they didn't have Capo Caco because of COVID protocol. I think Capo Caco will be playing tomorrow night against the Capitals. But still, like, they played a complete game. The defense looked good. Igor Shesterkin had his best game of the year. The only goal he let in was definitely – it was an unlucky bounce that he was out of position for. And, you know, I do put some of the blame on him, but he made some big saves down the stretch over the course of the game. He didn't let the Penguins get that second goal to go up 2-0 for much of the first period. And then Brett Howden got in a fight, and the Rangers came out in the second looking like a completely different team. They got a bunch of chances. They finally got some puck luck with Kevin Rooney, who scored in two straight games, who is Filipino's replacement. So if Filipino scores two goals in two games – like he did. If Rooney's going to do that, you know, I won't complain. I just hope he gets more consistent because he's our fourth line center now for the next couple of weeks. And Panarin put up a 3-point night. He's got 12 points now in 9 games. So he's still playing at that heart level that he was last year, where he was third in the MVP race. Kreider scored again. See, that's 3 goals in 4 games for him. He's been a rock. He always has been. I think he's the second highest leading scorer on the team. And then there's guys like young defensemen like Adam Fox and Keandre Miller just making incredible plays. Keandre Miller saved a goal with a blocked shot late in the third period on Monday night. It was their most complete performance of the year other than the second game against the Islanders, where everyone was still kind of finding their footing a little bit. But They won the game 3-1. Panarin with a goal and 2 assists. Shesterkin made like 25 or 26 stops. And, you know, you got to take that momentum because now you're playing a really good team in the Washington Capitals tomorrow at home. Get your first consecutive wins in a row. And you got to just carry that out through the rest of the season. Leave that negativity of the D'Angelo situation behind you. David Quinn's got to move on. And hopefully you get Blackwell and Kako back in there as soon as possible. And if Kevin Rooney keeps playing well in Hedl's spot, this team's good enough to get cooking. They did it around this time of the season last year. They had a really good February and a good March before obviously disaster struck with the COVID pandemic. But yeah, this team can get hot, man. They can get hot. And I'd like to see them play Shesterkin a little more so we can get in a little bit more of a groove. I think Georgiev should be the backup. I don't know if I love the tandem idea as much as I did when the season started, now that they've been kind of inconsistent, both of them. And you got to fill that D'Angelo hole. But otherwise, if they can win tomorrow night, they can come out and play well. If they can win some hockey games in a row here, I mean, everyone's playing against each other, so no one's going to run away from the pack completely. I think it's going to be close the whole way through with all 8 teams. So
we'll see. I completely agree. I think you hit every point pretty much very well.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing about the NHL this season. It's going to be hard for any team to run away with anything the way that they all play with each other, the way they all play against each other in the same division. I have a feeling that there's legit possibility, especially in the Metropolitan Division, that first and eighth place could be separated by 10, 12 points. So it's going to be really close. You got to win these close ones. A lot of overtime losses throughout as well. So, yeah, we'll see, man. We'll see. It should be exciting, though. But the Rangers are 1-0 post the Tony D'Angelo era in Madison Square Garden, and got to go out there and win tomorrow night.
I agree. All right, so you know what? Before we end this episode, why don't we kind of preview the Super Bowl for a quick minute and a half? So first off, Chiefs, Bucks, who do you want to win?
I want the Chiefs to win. I definitely want the Chiefs to win. But here's what I'll say. The Chiefs will win if there is a commercial involving Eli Manning, which I heard that there might be. And hear me out. When the Eagles beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl, there was the Eli Manning, Odell Beckham Jr. Dirty Dancing commercial, which was awesome, by the way. I don't care what anyone says. That was a terrific commercial.
That was a very good commercial.
So when Eli Manning, I'll say in air quotes, shows up, Tom Brady is 0-3. And I saw a little tease of an Archie Payton Eli commercial. So if that commercial airs in the Super Bowl, the Chiefs will win. If not, the Buccaneers will win. but I want the Chiefs to win. My serious prediction, I'll say the Chiefs. I know it's supposed to rain a lot, but 30-24 Kansas City.
30-24 Kansas City. Okay, I respect that. Okay, for mine, I'm going to say, see, right now, for my who I want to win, here's where I got kind of like a flow chart going. So for the Chiefs, why I don't want them to win. So one, I don't want them to repeat. I don't want two-peat, whatever. And then two, Jackson Mahomes pisses me off. For the Bucs, though, I feel like it's just too much of – I don't know. I just hate Brady. I absolutely despise Brady. I never want Brady to win. He's the greatest player of all time, but I don't want him to see him win another one. Despite how much I like the Bucs last season when Jameis Winston was at the helm, I do not like them now. Therefore, I'm going to say 27-17 Colts – or Colts. Chiefs, wow. 27-17 Chiefs.
I think that – I predict 30-24, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's a really, really high scoring game.
I hope so, man. Those are the best Super Bowls.
I mean, here's the way I see it, and I did some research on this, so this isn't that blasphemous of a take, but I think that this could be the greatest quarterback matchup in the history of the Super Bowl.
100%. I mean, you saw the last time that these guys met in the playoffs. It was that one championship game that came down to, was it overtime? I don't know if it was over. I think it was overtime.
The Patriots scored in overtime.
Man, I was watching that at a Sweet 16. I remember how mad I got. That was so funny. Yeah. But, look, I think that that was a very great matchup, and I think that this will be no less than that. I think that this will be a great game to watch. I'm excited to watch it. I'm hoping for my pool numbers to hit. But other than that, I think it'll just be fun to watch.
Yeah. I think it'll be a good game. I hope it's not a blowout. I don't think it will be a blowout. This game,
I don't think it will be.
This game doesn't really have blowout written on it. So,
I agree.
Yeah, it should be fun. It should be fun. I'm excited. I love the Super Bowl, man. The Super Bowl is awesome. Like, who doesn't love the Super Bowl? The Super Bowl is one of those things where if you don't watch sports, you still love it. Like, it's just awesome.
How can you not like the Super Bowl?
Exactly. It's great. It's honestly, it's the biggest sporting event in the world every year. So, I'm excited to watch it because it's one game. Everyone's watching. I'm excited that my boy Jim Nance is on the call. Love him. And Tony Romo's the best color guy in the NFL as well. So I'm excited the game's on CBS this year because they're honestly my favorite football network. But
I also like CBS the most.
I'm a big CBS guy. I don't really – this is a hot take here. I don't really mind Joe Buck. I think he does a pretty – because I'm a big baseball guy too, so, like, I think he's a really good baseball announcer. But I think that Aikman's kind of stupid. And then I am of the opinion that the NBC booth is incredibly overrated, but I know that's unpopular. So if I can take some
– No, I completely get that. I understand that.
Yeah. I mean, if I take some heat for that, I don't really mind it. That's just my – that's my take on it. But, yeah. I guess we're both predicting a Chiefs win. I guess we're both rooting for the Chiefs. And then one thing I saw, one more little football tidbit, is that, like, the Texans claim that they're not going to trade Deshaun Watson, but I don't really
– Look, that's just a way to gain leverage, kind of. It's the same thing that happened with Jamal Adams. It's the same thing that happened with Josh Rosen.
I said, like, it doesn't mean much, but yeah, so I don't think he'll be a Houston Texan next year.
Me either. Me as well.
I think he'll either be a Jet. I think he'll end up in the AFC East. I think he'll be a Jet, a Patriot, or a Dolphin.
I hope he's not a Patriot.
That would be awful.
That would be awful. All right, well, that just about wraps up our episode 32. It'll be a fun weekend for the Super Bowl. Hopefully we get some fun news as well for some other teams. But other than that, that's all we have for today. So thank you guys for listening. Take care.
Thanks, guys.